Well, thank you for inviting me here. I've never been to Santa Barbara or KITP. It seems like a fantastic place. I see they've had the good sense to block all the windows so we can't be distracted by the beautiful location. I'm going to give a, in this series of talks, you'll have to forgive me for being not very familiar with the audience. So I kind of thought I would explain some of the tools in topology and some aspects of topology that seem to come up in physics. And yeah, I just thought I'd discuss a series of different kind of tools and techniques. So one thing, though, that there's a lot of topological questions that wind up, a lot of physics questions generate problems in topology, but it's often the case that the topological answer doesn't quite have as much information as you'd need in the physics. So, for instance, suppose I, does this board move? Yeah, okay. So suppose I started with a Riemann surface, or really, let's suppose we had a parameterized family of Riemann surfaces. So this will be some parameter space. And this will be a Riemann surface, so a two-manifold. And suppose, by some construction, I wind up producing a three-dimensional cohomology class on this space. So we produce alpha in H3. And I want to kind of integrate out the Riemann surface. And so if we integrate this over sigma, we get an element in H1 of S with integer, suppose it worked out to have integer coefficients. And maybe there's some topological theory that would lead me into this situation. But the answer then I get in topology is a homotopy class of maps from S into the circle. And that's sort of too crude of a piece of information to do much with. This might be, you might want to have this term to have contributed to a Lagrangian, so you would actually want an actual map to the circle, not just a homotopy class. So I want to, in these first two talks, I want to introduce a kind of refinement of algebraic topology that in this situation would actually produce just a smooth map to the circle, and more generally lets you kind of combine much more complicated topological situations with differential forms and produce sort of in general more refined topological information. So I should have said at the beginning that this part is joint work with Singer, it also, there's a lot of contributions in body English from Dan Fried. And let's see, there's a paper. I forgot to look it up. I forgot to write down what it is on the XXX archive, so I'll put the reference up next time. There's a paper, quadratic functions. ... by myself and Singer, and I'll write down the number on the XXX archive that has a lot of this stuff. Okay, so that's supposed to be the general setup. We're looking for some kind of refinement of algebraic topology that would lead us to a more refined piece of information here. So here's the, so let me just, excuse me, All right, so let's start then with the base, the most basic setup, and that'll be this notion of differential functions. So in this setup, I have a smooth manifold. And I have a topological space. So here I'm supposed to be thinking of, I'm imagining that my smooth manifold was S and my topological space was the circle. And I want a notion of maps between these that somehow makes use of the smooth structure on M. And so we need a little bit of extra data. I also want a choice of a cocycle, a real cocycle on X. So this is a... You can think of X as also a smooth manifold, and this cocycle is coming from a differential form, but that's not necessary. And in most of the interesting examples, X isn't a smooth manifold, but it's built to to classify some kind of structures on M. So then a differential function from M to X supplemented by iota is three pieces of information. CH, we call them CH and omega, where C is a map. H is an N minus 1 cochain. And omega is an N form on M. Oops, I'm sorry. With the property that the coboundary of H is omega minus the pullback of iota. So I'm going to give you several examples that I hope will make this notion seem, that will reduce to familiar notions in some cases and make it seem, hopefully give you an idea of what's going on. But you can already see that this combines the topology of X with the smooth structure on M via the forms. Okay, so that's our basic notion, and I want to just go through and do algebraic topology with differential functions instead of ordinary functions and see what we get. So the first thing is we need to make differential functions into a space. We want to define a whole space of maps from M into this X iota, but some of the information isn't lending itself to moving around in families. I can certainly move C through families, and that's fine, and I could move omega through a family, but this kind of information, a singular cochain, is pretty discrete, and this is basically a combinatorial kind of information. So in order to make these differential functions into a space, we need to think about, we need to take a somewhat formal approach to what we mean by a space. So, So I have to take a kind of combinatorial approach to spaces. So we're going to model the function space of maps from M into X. But before I do it, let me just talk about a combinatorial model for an arbitrary space. So suppose Y is just a space. Then we can capture most of the topological invariants of Y. Um, from something that's essentially combinatorial. So they are contained in the following sequence of sets. This is just going to be the set of all points of Y, but with no topology. This is just the abstract points of Y. The one sing one is the set of maps from a one simplex into Y. So the set of paths in Y, the set of two simplices in Y, etc. So if I give you just as discrete sets the set of all maps of simplices into Y, well, I could certainly patch those together and understand how to map any simplicial complex into Y, and in particular, I could tell you how to map. Well, I could understand how to map manifolds into Y by triangulating them, and it's at least plausible then that all the combinatorial, all the information, all the topological invariants you would want from Y are captured by this sequence of discrete sets, together with the information I would need to patch maps along edges of simplices. So I won't spell this out, but this sing stands for singular complex, because it's the basic object from which the singular chain complex of Y is built. And this collection of data is known as a simplicial set. So this is a combinatorial approach. It's very useful in algebraic topology because it gets rid of the topology, and it lets us describe a topological space just in terms of data associated to simplices. So I can give you a topological space by giving you some set that'll play the role of points, some set that'll play the role of paths, some set that'll play the role of two simplices, and etc. Okay, so I want to make these differential functions into a space, and I'll just do it by making it into one of these more combinatorial objects. So I think I'll stay on this board, if that's okay. Yeah, is it helpful if I spell that out?
But so there is some well-defined set of.
Yeah, I have to. So if I wanted to patch two simplices together to make a map, say, of this figure into X, I would need to know how to glue them along the boundary. So I need to give myself a map from this set to this set that corresponds to restricting to the boundary. And so in general, you give yourself all the maps between these that correspond to linear maps of simplices. And it's a little bit more, that's actually, you don't quite do that, you just need orientation preserving linear maps. It gets a little technical, but it's actually an extremely convenient way to do a lot of things in algebraic topology. But you're right, Robert, I need to give myself some maps between these sets. But I think I won't, I'm happy to spell it out, but I think the talk starts getting very formal if I do that. Okay, so I want to make these differential function spaces into, these differential functions into spaces. So, we'll define the differential function space . So let's write this as X iota upper M will be the space with n simplices, the differential functions from m cross the standard n simplex into x iota. All right, now I will get to an example of this in a minute, but I want to just, there's one other variation I need to introduce. It turns out that this object has no more information in it than the ordinary function space does. There's no refined topological information. And we need to do something more in order to hit this refinement I was alluding to of algebraic topology. So this space comes with a filtration, and that's the important extra piece of information. So we'll define the kth filtration that's the set of all so this is the space whose n simplices are these differential functions but they have the property that there's a restriction on omega. So omega, oops, that's an n. Omega, which is a k form on this, so if I write out I write it out in terms of its Kunneth components, I want the Kunneth component of omega on the n simplex to be less than or equal to k. All right, and so this is finally the object of interest. It seems a little elaborate, but it's, we'll see that it really, you can do algebraic topology with these kinds of function spaces just as well as you could with ordinary function spaces. And the end result is that you get a much more refined kind of topological information. So I think the best thing for me to do now and to give you a feel for these is to work out a couple of examples. And in order to do some examples, I need to go from an essentially combinatorial description of a space to something you would think of as geometric. And so I need to do this by extracting some of the basic topological invariants of a space like this. So I want to do this, but let me just introduce or remind you of one more notion from algebraic topology. So some of the most basic topological invariants of a space are the homotopy groups, the set of path components is pi zero, the set of loops up to homotopy is the fundamental group, and there's a rather beautiful combination of the two of the path components and the fundamental group that's often called the fundamental groupoid. Now, this notion has, I took some time and looked up sort of where this first came in mathematics. A groupoid is usually described as a category where all the maps are isomorphisms. But the fundamental groupoid was introduced by Rademeister long before the language of categories was around. And many of these, I think this is a rather beautiful point, that many of these, the language of categories often helps you understand the fundamental groupoid in familiar terms, but the the object itself was really something that was measuring the topological invariance of a space. And the same is true of many of these higher categories that that you run into in trying to understand three co-cycles or things like gerbs, that they're actually reduced to some fairly simple descriptions of the homotopy type or of the topological invariance of a space. But if you want to recognize these in some alternate, or if your space is a moduli space and you want to recognize these things in terms of moduli, you wind up with kind of an elaborate and categorical notion. And really this first instance of this is this fundamental groupoid, which, like I said, was probably one of the, it actually predated the notion of categories. So what's the fundamental groupoid of a space? It's a groupoid, so the objects are the points. A map between two points is a path. So that's a path from A to B. And now I have to tell you the composition law. And the composition law is that every time I have a two-simplex, so this is a map from the two-simplex into Y, the result, this morphism followed by this one is equal to this one. So if I call this F, G, and this H, H is equal to the composition of G with F. So you can check for yourself that the isomorphism classes of objects are the path components of Y, and the automorphism group of any object is the fundamental group of Y based at that point. Okay, so this is a, from our point of view, a nice topological invariant, because it's clear how I would define this if I'm merely given this collection of combinatorial data. If I'm merely given a simplicial set, I have exactly this information at my disposal to talk about the fundamental groupoid. Okay, so what I want to do now is go through some examples of these differential function spaces and describe for you what the fundamental groupoid works out to be. So let's take M to be a smooth manifold up here, and X will be infinite dimensional complex projective space, which I'm thinking of as the classifying space for U1 bundles. And iota will be a fundamental two co-cycle. So iota will be a two co-cycle representing the first Chern class of the universal bundle. All right, so we have three different spaces that we can, if we're just going to look at the fundamental groupoid of this space of differential functions, there's really three different ones of these that we can look at. So let's start with the second filtration. And we'll study the fundamental groupoid of this space and just see what kind of information we're capturing. So let's see. A point in that is just a map from my manifold into CP infinity. So we can think of that as just classifying a principal U1 bundle over M. So the zero simplicity, so the objects are U1 bundles over M. Now, actually, This is going to turn out to be almost all the information that's in this. There won't be much refined information in this filtration. But in order to make this discussion flow a little better as we vary this parameter, let me just say I can think of these as U1 bundles over M with connection. And omega, so remember a typical object is a CH omega. And omega is a two-form. And it's a two-form representing the first Chern class of this bundle. And let's just think of this, we can think of omega as corresponding to the curvature form. In fact, if I started with a U1 bundle with connection, I could get a differential function by taking C to be a classifying map, omega to be the curvature, and H is essentially encoding the connection form. So you'll just have to, I'm not going to spell it out, but you'll just have to believe me that a differential function into this space is essentially a U1 bundle with connection on M. No. Okay, so this is in this case I chose C to be an integer form, but it isn't required to be. But there is something, there is still a kind of discretization of the kinds of forms I'm encountering, because I'm only getting forms that are pulled back by a map into X. So if this form had actually been half of an integer, then the only things I would have gotten on X are, you know, say one half plus an integer. They still would have been quantized to only lie along integer jumps. So you might as well think of it as an integer form, but all of that is encoded in the fact that I'm mapping into X. It's technically much more convenient not to require that. Okay. All right. But in our case, it happened to actually come from an integer cocycle. Okay, so the objects are U1 bundles with connection, and now if I have a U1 bundle, so now what are the paths in this space? Well, so now I have a U1 bundle with connection over X cross the interval. And I could integrate I could use parallel transport along the interval to get a map from this U1 bundle with connection to this one. Okay, so the maps are just maps of principal bundles. There's no restriction on the map. I can get an arbitrary map of bundles by integrating some one parameter family of connections. So the maps are just principal U1 bundle maps. So we just think of that as gotten by parallel transport along the interval. But that's not the whole story. There's the composition law, which has encoded in it an equivalence relation. So let's look at a very degenerate kind of two simplex. Let's suppose our two simplex is this, and let's just imagine that G is all sitting at this one point. So here I have a homotopy. So in this fundamental groupoid, this map and this map are supposed to be identified, and again, I could use parallel transport, or however I want to see it, I find that that homotopic maps of principal bundles are equivalent in this particular space. So this tells me I have to identify. So the maps are principal bundle maps modulo homotopy. So this is an extremely weak notion, and it's almost too weak to be useful. And in fact, in this case, that's also the same thing as the fundamental groupoid of just the ordinary space of maps from M into CP infinity. So this situation is old-fashioned algebraic topology. So this is the usual topological notion. And we haven't learned anything new, but we're looking at the second filtration in this space. So I just set this up to tell you that ordinary topology is actually living in here, and that if we didn't do anything careful with this filtration, we would just be encountering ordinary topology. All right, well, let's move down an example. I'm sorry.
I need to say, so if you use the second filtration and compute the fundamental groupoid, you just get a fundamental groupoid of maps from M to CP.
That's right, yeah. Right. And one way of describing that is principal U1 bundles with connection, but just the maps are homotopy classes of principal bundle maps. It's not a notion that really comes up very much. But it is what you'd get out of the purely topological situation. Okay, so another example. So now let's take the filtration 1 case. So we'll look at filtration 1. And now nothing has changed as far as the objects go. So the objects are still principal U1 bundles with connection. The maps are still principal bundle maps. But now let's look at this problem we ran into before. So so now, remember, in this situation, how did we get this thing about homotopic maps? We had a principal U1 bundle with connection over this space, and we just used parallel transport, and we got an arbitrary homotopy between this map and this map. Now we can't quite use, so now we're in filtration 1, and we're not allowed to have a completely arbitrary connection on this. So being in filtration 1 means the curvature form has only a one-form component on this space. So remember, this is really a very degenerate two-simplex. So the curvature form, I'll just say the curvature form has only a one-form component on the two-simplex. So by the time I've parallel translated along this direction, I've used up that one-form. And so when I consider this family of paths varying in the transverse direction, they have to be constant in the space of bundle maps. I mean, another way of saying it is the difference between this map and this map will be gotten by integrating the curvature form over this two-dimensional space. But the curvature form can only have a one-form component on that space, and so that'll have to give me 0. So in this case, the maps are principal bundle maps, but with no further restriction. So this gives us, already you can see you get a much better fundamental groupoid here. This is what we would usually think of as the topological category of principal bundles with connection. The maps between these principal bundles don't have to preserve the connection. So you can already see that something we usually label as purely topological already needs a little bit of geometry to even exist. That the truly purely topological notion is this kind of cruddy, weak notion where we have homotopy classes of principal bundle maps. And here in the first filtration, we get a much better notion that we still think of as essentially topological. Okay. So the third notion in here is the zeroth filtration of this space. So now, once again, the objects will be principal U1 bundles with connection. And the maps are, well, now what about the maps? So we were supposed to have a principal bundle with connection over our parameter space cross over M cross an interval. But now there's a restriction. I'm supposed to be in the zero component. And so the curvature form. So remember, this is really standing. So let me just say, the curvature form this thing has to actually be in the it can at most have a function in this, right? Along the interval. So the curvature form must actually be, since it's also closed, the curvature form must be pulled back . It has to be constant along 0, 1. It has to be pulled back from a form along M. So a priori, it was just a two-form on M tensor, a function on the interval. But since it was a closed form, that function has to be constant. And this implies, then, that when I parallel translate, that the map between principal bundles I get actually has to preserve the connection. So the maps are horizontal, which means connection preserving. Maps of principal bundles. Okay, so that was supposed to give you some idea of what this theory of differential function spaces and what this kind of topology is giving you. It tends to let you, these filtrations tend to let you filter between very, very geometric notions. This is probably the most geometric notion of a principal U1 bundle. It's the most rigid geometric notion to extremely weak and purely homotopy theoretic notions.
Why is the connection preserved? Not the curvature, but what curvature?
Let me see if I can say it better.
Imagine computing any polar. Take a look at that. And then the cylinder.
Well, the whole of me can't change.
Okay, all right. So, all right. So that's supposed to tell you that this theory of differential functions, as I said, filters between, or it passes from, it contains very very geometric notions as well as very very coarse topological notions. All right. So that's supposed to be an illustrative yet very simple example, and I want to give you some more complicated ones. So, let me just see which ones will be useful. All right. So, let me just point out one mild generalization of this. Let's take X to be an Eilenberg-MacLane space. So, again, you have to forgive my unfamiliarity with the audience. I don't know if... So, the Eilenberg-MacLane space has the property, in fact, it's characterized by the property that homotopy classes of maps is just the HN of X of M with integer coefficients. So our CP infinity was KZ2. And we'll take iota to be some class representing the generator of HN with integer coefficients. So this will be just a generator. And we can, if we wish, and it's usually cleaner to do so, suppose that it actually generates the integer cohomology group, just like our choice of first Chern class did here. So in this case, this is homotopy classes of maps into KZN, which is also the set of path components in the function space. And I'll just say that the path components of the differential function space but this is the Cheeger-Simons cohomology group now there's this funny business with indexing. So Cheeger and Simons would have called this H hat n minus 1 of M. Or the Cheeger-Simons group and that's of differential characters, they called this. And that's the same thing as the smooth Deligne cohomology group. HNN of M. So this group sits in an exact sequence. This group sits in an exact sequence. Where the kernel is HN minus 1 of M with coefficients in R mod Z, and the co-kernel is the group of closed N forms with integer periods. So I know these differential characters, they come up in doing classical Chern-Simons theory, and they come up in doing Chern-Simons theory, for instance, in in physics. So I just wanted to indicate, so there are two points I wanted to make with this. One is that, again, the space of differential functions contains something much more refined than integer cohomology. It remembers a closed form representing your cohomology class, and it even remembers some more refined information one dimension lower. If I hadn't looked at the zeroth filtration in the set of path components, I would have just gotten the ordinary integer cohomology group. So this example is supposed to lead you to point a way to another generalization. So Eilenberg-MacLane spaces are how topologists would, how in homotopy theory we would approach ordinary cohomology. They're the classifying spaces for ordinary cohomology groups. And more generally, we could we can take X to be some space representing some kind of cohomology theory. So for example, we might take X to be the space of Fredholm operators representing K theories. X might be a classifying space and in that case, we get, or we might have in mind some kind of cobordism or some other kind of cohomology theory. You might have in mind elliptic cohomology theory. And so this leads to, so let's call this cohomology theory E, for example. And this leads to an analog of these Deligne cohomology groups or of the Cheeger-Simons differential characters, so it leads to a differential cohomology. A differential version of our cohomology theory E. So we usually write those as E hat. So, for example, when this is a classifying space for K theory, we get a differential version of K theory, and you can show that differential K theory is essentially the K theory of vector bundles with superconnection. Okay, so, all right, that's supposed to just indicate for you that we can bring sort of an enormous now amount of apparatus from algebraic topology into this story and get and bring with us much more refined information than usual. So, can I define them? Oh, sure. Yeah. So there's a couple of useful descriptions. So let me first define the Cheeger-Simons group. What could it still be? Here, this one. Let me first define this one. These are going to be isomorphic. I'll just give you a couple different descriptions of these groups. So H n minus 1 hat of M. That's this is the group of differential characters which is the set of this is the set of characters set of homomorphisms from the group of smooth n minus 1 cycles into R mod Z, such that so it's a character of the group of n minus 1 cycles on M, such that that if my cycle's a boundary, well, it's homomorphisms like this plus an n form. The n form's actually forced on you, plus omega n, such that, so let's call this chi, such that chi of the boundary of a cycle is the integral of over the cycle of the integral over n of omega. Okay, so this was the Cheeger-Simons definition. And so that's the group of differential characters. This is a very useful notion, but it also isn't quite as refined as you would like. This is a cohomology class, and it's often better to actually have a cochain complex around, so that you often need cochains and cocycles instead of just cohomology classes. So the group HNN. Let me give you two descriptions. So there's the Deligne version. So here we write Z of N for the complex. The complex Z goes to omega 0, goes to omega n minus 1. So this is like, it's part of the Durham complex, augmented by just the map from the constant group of integers going into functions, but it quits at dimension, just below dimension n. And that's what this works out to be. And the group HMN is the mth cohomology group of my manifold with coefficients in this complex of sheaves. So I could make this more concrete, but let me just—I want to just put this up to kind of locate what that symbol means, HNN, in this language. And I'll give you a ZN. Thank you. Yeah. M is, no, it's not. Yeah, this is just a bigraded collection of groups. And then there's another description that actually comes up in the language of differential function spaces. We can make a cochain complex. So let me define CN. So we're going to make a cochain complex where we have triples in every position. So we have C, H, and omega. So the kth, we'll make a cochain complex out of this where the k cochains are triples C, H, omega, where C is an ordinary k cochain on M with integer coefficients. Omega is an n form. A K form, I'm sorry, and H is an N minus 1 cochain, a K minus 1 cochain with real coefficients. And now this N has to come in, and what we insist here is that omega equals 0 if K is less than N. Okay, so it's like, it's a modification of the actual cochain complex where I have forms as well. And And now I have to make this into a chain complex, or a cotain complex, so we define the differential of CH omega to be. I hadn't planned on telling you this, so there's a sign I might have wrong, but the signs worked out in our paper correctly. So the coboundary is the coboundary of C, H minus omega minus C, and D omega. So let's just see, what does it mean for this to be closed? So then that means C is closed, and omega is closed, and the coboundary of H is, that should be a plus. The coboundary of H is omega minus C. So it's very much like the original definition of differential function. So this becomes a cochain complex in the nth cohomology group. Of CN is also equal to the group HMN. Well, that's three different descriptions. You can kind of pick your favorite. This is nice because it's very operational. It's the kind of invariant that comes out of Chern-Simons theory, for instance. This one's nice once you come to grips with the cohomology of a complex of sheaves, because it's very much in the spirit of building line bundles by out of local data. This one admits very nice local descriptions. And this one is nice because a lot of the formal properties, well, this is nice in the same way that the singular cochain complex of a space is nice. It's huge, and it isn't something you really want to think about in detail, but it's very, very good for theoretical purposes. So from this point of view, it's obvious that there's a ring structure on this that combines the cut product of cochains and the wedge product of forms. There is a ring structure here, but it's not so obvious, and in fact, Cheeger and Simons pointed out a multiplication here that looks very mysterious from the point of view of differential characters. So I've passed, in some sense, from the most concrete to the most theoretical, but they're all important ways of looking at it.
The second two have this extra label M.
Yeah, and I thought I wrote that right. The second have an extra label M, and it's when M equals N that I was too general, but yeah, they have a second label. But it's when M equals N that you get this.
And that's not related to this kind of filtration.
Yeah, it is related to the filtration I was talking about. Do you want me to spell that out? Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make this such a technical. Yeah, we can talk about it later. This here is related to the filtration. Yeah, that actually reminds me, I was going to do several more examples explaining this singular complex, but let me move on. I feel like this has become very abstract, and I wanted to give you some more another concrete example. So these differential function spaces and differential cohomology theories, and in general this sort of whole differential, this whole differential function space aspect of algebraic topology, lets you, you have in it all the apparatus you have in ordinary algebraic topology. So you can, so now I want to focus for a minute on this ordinary differential cohomology. So we have ordinary differential cohomology. So that's these, that's, those are these groups H, M, N I was just talking about, and they're derived from differential functions. To Eilenberg-MacLane spaces. Okay, so in this you have all of the apparatus that you actually have in ordinary cohomology. So all the usual apparatus is present. So we have cup products, we have integration, we have push forward, we have pull back, all the usual things that you can do with cohomology, you can do in these differential function spaces. So I just wanted to end this first talk by illustrating a couple of examples of this. So let me start with a compact Lie group. G, and we'll write BG for the classifying space. And we can imagine the group G is simply connected, but we don't need to. And I want to start with a cocycle, which I'll just call L, in a four cocycle on BG. If G was, say, simply a simple Lie group, the fourth cohomology of BG is just the group of integers, and L corresponds. L I've chosen because it corresponds to the level. Now, I want to. I didn't tell you, but a differential. If I have a smooth manifold M and a principal G bundle with connection, I get a differential function from M into BG iota. In fact, I get it for any choice of iota. So this is essentially, if you unwrap all the definitions, this is essentially Chern-Weil theory. So what I want to imagine doing is fixing a principal G bundle. So if we fix, no, let's just, when G was U1, it was, but I'm only remembering, if you want, the Chern-Weil forms of the connection, and that in general isn't enough information to determine the connection. You look puzzled. I'm remembering the, for instance, if G was the unitary group, and I just took cocycles on the classifying space of the unitary group, I would just be remembering the forms representing Chern classes, so the traces of the powers of the curvature. Well, right, but it's more. That's right. It's more. This differential function is a little bit more than just remembering those traces of those powers. But I couldn't in the U1 case. So let me just try to make it plausible. In the U1 case, I at least have the curvature form itself. And out of differential functions here, I don't quite have enough information to even get the curvature form. I just have the traces of the powers of the curvature form. Well, I don't actually know a completely good, let me try to answer that question later. So you get, so a differential function into BG with some choice of cocycle is not quite G bundles with connection, but let me just leave it at that. But this arrow does go in this direction. Given a G bundle with connection, I do get a differential function into the classifying space. So if we fixed a principal G bundle on M, then we get a map from the space of connections on P. Let's call it P. Then we get a map from the space of connections into the differential function space. So this would be the space of connections. All right, and this actually lands in the zeroth filtration. But I won't write that after this. So, all right, so then we have the evaluation map. I could rewrite that as a differential function from M cross the space of connections into BG iota. And now, now let's just go through a couple examples. If the dimension of M is 2, then if I pull back, let's see, I wonder if I haven't set this up in the cleanest way. So this differential function is really a triple, CH omega. And if I pull everything back, if I integrate over M, C star iota H omega, this gives me a differential function from the space of connections into CP infinity with its fundamental class. So I kind of don't think I set this up as well as I could have. But the point is that this gives me a map from the space of connections into, this gives me a U1 bundle with connection on this space of connections. And that was, I'm sorry, M is supposed to have dimension, oh yeah, M has dimension 2. All right, and I think I'm going to end this, because I think I can't quite spell this out in the time remaining in the way I'd like. But this leads to a description of classical Chern-Simons theory. And in some sense, this description is just, it's a refinement to the level of cocycles of something I think is probably due to Goetzky. at the level of differential cohomology groups or of differential characters. I think I'm going to end here because I don't quite have time to spell this out in as clean a way as I would like. But let me just end on a philosophical point that this differential function spaces, this theory, it's more apparatus, but it's very flexible, and it has, like I said, it's like the definition of the singular chain complex. You don't really want to get into the guts and think about it, but it's very good. It has very, very good formal properties. So I'll try to come back to this point next time, but this theory lets you do classical Chern-Simons theory in cases where there isn't really a good definition, say, of, for instance, the Chern-Simons line bundle on the space of connections. If the principle, if G wasn't simply connected and the principle bundle over my Riemann surface wasn't trivial, then I couldn't pull back Chern-Simons forms to make this line bundle. So this point of view lets you just kind of for free get these things like classical Chern-Simons theory. So in my next talk, I want to talk about a situation that involves a more sophisticated part of algebraic topology. This is something that essentially had to do with a cohomology class, and it had to do with this differential refinement of ordinary cohomology. There are situations, though, where you want to make these U1 bundles and the associated kind of Chern-Simons theory, where it isn't the basic topological invariant isn't associated to ordinary cohomology, and still this notion of differential function spaces lets you build these bundles and all the apparatus that that you're used to seeing in classical Chern-Simons theory. So that's next time. I'll try to start with a few comments and explain this a little more clearly. But my main goal is to show you some situations that involve a more sophisticated kind of algebraic topology, and as I said, still give you these line bundles with connection over the appropriate parameter spaces. All right. Thank you. Oh, I had in mind this thing where you have, where you start with a Lie group and a level, and you associate to every principal G bundle with connection on a Riemann surface a line. And if you write that, if your Riemann surface is a boundary of a 3-manifold, you get a vector in that line. That's the, you know, Dan, you want to help me out here? Okay. I mean, to a closed 3-manifold, right? It's the Chern-Simons term in the Lagrangian, right? Let's start with a closed 3-manifold, right? Then I'm supposed to get a point in U1.
But
yeah.
It is classical action.
Yeah. Yeah. Pure Chern. Right.
So the next lecture will begin at 11 o'clock.